We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Command Center podcast, home of the biggest edge in Dynasty fantasy football. My name is Travis May, and I'm joined by Curtis Patrick. We are the Devi and Dynasty coordinators at RotoViz. And last week, if you joined us, we covered everyone's favorite second-year running backs. And this week, it's time to talk some wide receivers. But first, I always talk about how I am the Devi coordinator, and maybe you don't know what that means. Maybe you don't even play in Devi leagues, but I just wanted to kind of start off by sharing one interesting player to me. This week might make it a thing here moving forward. I'm not really sure, but just wanted to share just because a lot of people here in the Nashville area are excited about, as much as you can be excited about Vanderbilt football. But Kalijah Lipscomb is probably the best wide receiver that they've had in a while since Jordan Matthews, but he's actually posted some pretty good numbers. He's not in many people's top 50 or so. In fact, he's right outside my top 50 Devi rankings, but he's actually already posted a season with a 33% dominator rating, and he actually has respectable numbers in yards per team pass attempt and touchdowns per team pass attempt as well. And so just tuck away that name if you play Devi leagues, if you like college football. Just wanted to drop that in there for you. But Curtis, how you doing, man?
Man, that's a nice name drop there. I used Lipscomb a couple times in college football DFS last year. So
nice.
You know, Jay Cutler is offended about this anti-Vanderbilt slander that you're throwing out there, but smoking Jay, man, that's good memories. I already miss all the cigarette memes, but anyway, yeah, doing great, man, doing great.
He's actually from really close to where I'm from. Like he's from just outside, I guess, Santa Claus, Indiana, like right around there. So it's about 45 minutes away from my hometown. So
Jay Cutler is from Santa Claus, Indiana.
Yeah, he's really close to there anyway. Yeah. I think he went to Heritage Hills, which
that's
is like
so perfect.
I know. But yeah, pretty close to there.
So Jay Cutler is going to star in Bad Santa 3 at some point in his life. That's where we're headed.
Man. That would be so good. And it was based in Holiday World, which is in Santa Claus, Indiana, by the way. So,
we are off the rails in the first 3 minutes of this episode. I can't wait to see where it goes. Hey, man, before we start cutting these second-year wide receivers, just want to remind our listeners about the FFPC. It's the premier place to play Dynasty Fantasy Football. The world's largest Dynasty League commissioner. Leagues up to $5,000 for your annual buy-in if you are one of the big-time, high-stakes sharks. If that's a little bit out of your range, they've got leagues starting at $77 and everywhere in between. They also have plenty of other great redraft formats, including best ball. Those drafts are filling daily. Go to myffpc.com. That's myffpc.com. It's the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. Just a reminder, all new subscribers to the Dynasty Command Center Slack also get a $35 league credit. You can apply that to any Dynasty League fee, $77 or higher.
Dude, I did just have to look it up right there just to make sure I wasn't off, because I knew I actually looked him up, and he is from Santa Claus, Indiana. I thought it was like right outside. So yeah, Jay Cutler, Santa Claus, Indiana, Bad Santa 3, coming to theaters near you 2029, probably, something like that. But enough of that. let's get to a couple guys who had a fantastic rookie year and what we think of them moving forward. I know a lot of people have very strong opinions when it comes to DJ Moore or Calvin Ridley. I mean, even with our Dynasty Command Center team, I know there's very, very differing opinions when it comes to even players like Calvin Ridley, probably more than anything just because of his age, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But DJ Moore, he's been creeping up in terms of his average draft position, and I was really surprised when I was looking at his rank on the RotoViz team, and he's all the way up to, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's wide receiver 11 on the RotoViz ranking team right now.
Yeah, he's crept into wide receiver one territory. He is now in front of guys like Antonio Brown and just behind Julio Jones. So he has climbed some this week. I believe when I looked, I just put an article out on DJ Moore. We'll talk about that in a minute.
So it's your fault.
I believe in the last I'm not saying that. I mean, people can arrive at their own conclusions, but I don't remember seeing him as a wide receiver one until this week. So he's definitely on the rise. We don't have anyone on our team that's ranking him below 28 in a startup in the overall rankings. So everyone thinks he's at least an early third rounder.
Wow.
And I'm counting 1, 2. I mean, 5 out of our 6 rankers are calling him a round 2 startup pick right now. So, you know, just let's just frame a little bit. You've got DJ's first year stats here.
Yeah, DJ Moore, I mean, it's really easy. We want players to go crazy in the rookie years, but it just doesn't always happen. So, I mean, he had the stat line, 55 receptions for 788 yards and just 2 touchdowns. And I think if he had anything more than just the 2 touchdowns, I think a lot more people would be perhaps even higher than they are now on DJ Moore, just because of his athletic profile, his production profile, his age, and what he's been able to do after one season. But, you know, Calvin Ridley had 10 touchdowns and people still have him ranked below. And obviously, I think that might have to do with his age as well. And in Dynasty, we like our players young. But the 2014 class, I mean, I was just digging through in preparation for this episode some recent data on some rookies and wide receivers and when they broke out and things like that. And I mean, I'm never going to get over just the ridiculousness that was the 2014 class. But since then, it's been pretty gross. Besides, you know, like guys like Michael Thomas, Tyreek Hill, really those two, and then maybe Cooper Kupp if you want to get excited about what he did his first year. But you know, not many guys are even breaking 150 fantasy points. But when you look at it, I mean, Calvin Ridley had over 200 in full PPR, and DJ Moore had 160. And so even in the 2014 class, he would have still been notable. He wouldn't have been the Odell Beckham Jr., who had nearly 300 fantasy points as a rookie. But 160, I think we expect too much sometimes from rookies, and I think that was incredible. I think the RotoViz team, they're reacting appropriately and getting excited about what he could be, and they're probably projecting for a pretty massive year two. But him being a wide receiver one, I'm not sure if I'm there yet. And I have more of him and Kerryon Johnson than any rookies from last year. So Curtis, I don't know how fast you're expecting this rise, but I know you had a piece here recently just talking about how inevitable you believe DJ Moore's rise truly is.
Yeah, and it has a lot to do with him playing his entire rookie season at age 21. He did not turn 22 before December 31st. And so it puts him in a really small group of players since the year 2000 that have even done that. That's very young. I mean, we don't see this often. You're talking about guys who have declared early. So, you know, a lot of these, to be fair, a lot of these names are good anyway. If you're going to declare and be able to make an NFL roster and spend the whole season there at age 21, I think there was only 43 players in the cohort. But when I started sorting through it, started to see some thresholds that looked like they might lead to something. And so playing with the Rotoviz screener, I actually came up with a litmus test for 21-year-old NFL rookies. And it's honestly pretty remarkable, man. So and these numbers are gonna sound stupid low. And at first it's just gonna be like, what? But if you're a 21-year-old receiver and you average 3 receptions a game and you play at least 10 games, that's it. 3 receptions a game, and you played at least 10 games. Here's the list of guys who did that besides DJ Moore since the year 2000. Larry Fitzgerald, Percy Harvin, Jeremy Maclin, Hakeem Nicks, Josh Gordon, Keenan Allen, DeAndre Hopkins, Brandon Cooks, Mike Evans, Allen Robinson, Sammy Watkins, Amari Cooper, and Juju Smith-Schuster. That's it. Those are the 13 before DJ Moore.
That's an okay list to be on.
Okay,
you're doing okay.
Let's just ignore where those guys even finished in their rookie year. Some of them had big rookie years. Some of them weren't even in the top 36. You know, if you're on the low end of the 3 receptions per game and played at least 10 games. But here's what that group has done. 13 out of 13 have gone on to have at least one top 20 PPR season, 100%. Every single one of them. 11 out of those 13 have recorded at least one top 12 PPR season. 11 out of the 13, 85% of that cohort has posted a wide receiver 1 fantasy season. 5 out of the 13 have posted a top 5 PPR season. And 5 of the 13 posted a wide receiver 1 season the next year. Their second year in the NFL, age 22 season, 5 out of the 13. So, I mean, DJ Moore, based on the guys who have done this before him, you know, 38.5% of those guys were wide receiver ones the second year. So I think we immediately have to start thinking about what's the path for DJ Moore to do that this year. But even if he doesn't, he would be the first guy that met that threshold to not post a top 20 season if he doesn't go on and do that at some point in his career. So if DJ Moore posts a top 20 PPR season this year, what's going to happen to his dynasty ADP? I think that the road of his team's already kind of priced in what would happen if you see a 22. I mean, what happened to Juju? Juju was wide receiver 20 in his first year, and he just exploded. And then wide receiver 8. And were we thinking that he had that type of upside with Antonio Brown there? And Martavis Bryant there, remember back in 2017 when he was still a thing?
Oh, man.
I mean, it was kind of hard to see the path to that. And Le'Veon Bell still in the offense. A lot of things can change in a short amount of time in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to question his place in that group. His name shows up with these other names. I mean, that's good enough for me. When we're talking about like Hakeem Nicks as one of the least desirable names on that list, and he had 2 top 12 PPR seasons in his career before he was derailed by injury.
Seriously, in his second and third seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, he went from 33. I mean, DJ Moore was 35. He went from 33 to 8 to 12, like right there, quickly. So, you really just can't doubt that there's something good is probably in DJ Moore's future. And they just moved on with Devin Funchess. And obviously, maybe Cam's shoulder's a little questionable. That could change things, but... You know, and there's Curtis Samuel there, but it's not like they have a stud taking a bunch of the targets away. I mean, well, really, their wide receiver 1 is Christian McCaffrey. So, but I mean, beyond the running back, I mean, he's the guy. So it would be fun to see if he has that astronomical rise into the you know, wide receiver one category. I know a lot of people wanted it out because of Cam Newton. Are you concerned with that? Not just with the shoulder, but with his tendency to not have wide receiver ones in fantasy?
Well, who has he had since Steve Smith left?
That's what I always ask. That's the right question.
Who was supposed to be that wide receiver one? I mean, there's a reason Greg Wilson has basically smashed ever since Steve Smith left Carolina. He was clearly the best talent in the pass catching core, and the team treated him as such. I wanted to take a second just to talk about the 2019 prospects for more, just in a little bit deeper detail. The 13 other wide receivers in that cohort, they averaged an extra 23 receptions in their second year.
Yeah. If that happens, okay, an for extra DJ 23 Moore.
Receptions. So he had 55 last year. Yeah. So in my piece, I just, you know, very simply credited him his average yards per reception and extended his touchdown rate to include those additional 23 receptions. And his line would be 78 receptions for just over 1,100 yards. And of course, only 3 touchdowns. You know, he's going to have some regression in that touchdown rate, I would think, this year.
Oh, yeah.
But even certainly, if he doesn't, that line, 78, 1,117, and 3 touchdowns, that's 207.7 PPR points. Guess where that would have put him last year?
Where?
Wide receiver 20.
You're going to tell me. Wide receiver 20.
And what did we say? That group, 100% of the time, has hit that. So just really interesting. You know, time will tell if he can keep that cohort perfect. But yeah, I mean, I'm high on DJ Moore. The rest of the team is high on DJ Moore. And I think that good players, you know, talent wins out. And he was so young and so good. And he had the, it's not out of nowhere. I mean, the profile was sterling when he came out.
Oh, yeah.
He had everything that we wanted. We had the breakout age. We had the dominator. We had everything with DJ Moore.
I mean, there was nothing. I tried to find something. I tried to find anything. Like when I was digging through, even months before, I was like, man, if he has an okay combine, people are going to go nuts. And then he showed up and had basically the best, if not like the second or third best combine in the entire class and just crushed it. So there was just, it left no questions in his entire profile. So I'm not surprised. It's hard to go all in on these players and say confidently, you know what, I'm just going to rank him as a wide receiver one, but it looks like our team's already there. So it's good to see, and hopefully this is the case, but hopefully it comes to fruition. But it looks like the road of his team's ahead of the curve there, because his average draft position is still in the late 30s, like 38.1, I think, here recently. So maybe the rest of the world will see why the road of his team had him ranked so highly. But conversely, Calvin Ridley, I mean, he didn't have the perfect profile. I mean, he had some questions athletically. He had some questions just because he was so old. His breakout age, there's the laundry list of things that, you know, he didn't fit into a perfect regression, you know, analysis of, you know, he didn't fall into the right place with the right variables to say that he's going to hit. But he had the draft capital, and that was enough to give him an opportunity last year, and he got 10 touchdowns. But why is he so much lower for you, Curtis?
Well, I actually don't. I mean, lower than DJ Moore. I mean, I've got Ridley at wide receiver 22.
Okay, so he's not considerably down the list, but still, you know, he's not a wide receiver one, and he actually had a better stat line and fantasy output as a rookie.
Sure. He's also going to have to contend with Julio Jones for, you know, a couple more years. Overall, I think he's in a more desirable offense. So, I don't think being the wide receiver two in Atlanta, or even, you know, if Ridley ascends a little bit more, the wide receiver 1B, that's not a bad place to be. Matt Ryan's propped up some really big stat lines with that scenario in the past with Julio and Roddy White. Then even Mohamed Sanu has been a valuable and probably underrated fantasy flex player for several seasons in that offense. So, I mean, obviously, I think touchdown regression is coming for Ridley this year. But the main reason he's down there is just because of the age. You know, if you look at, you know, the 24-year-old rookies, you know, it's basically in NFL history, it's basically him and Cooper Kupp and then garbage. Calvin Ridley's actually, he's the most productive fantasy wide receiver in the NFL since the year 2000 as a 24-year-old rookie. Number one, only guy to put up over 200 PPR. So, I think he's king of the mountain. It's not maybe a desirable mountain to be on, but he did everything that we could have asked him to do as a rookie. And as long as Julio's there and playing at a high level, he's going to continue to draw, you know, favorable matchups from opposing defenses and kind of be able to do what he wants. And, you know, I might be a little low on him. I mean, I've got him at, you know, the tier that I have him in is, you know, is with N'Keal Harry, Tyler Lockett, Tyler Boyd, Calvin Ridley. You know, that's the tier that he's in. And I think those are all guys that can, they could kind of take that next leap or kind of just stall out there. This is a range, I think, that's very difficult to get right year after year after year. It's the guys that we just want to push up, but we just don't have quite enough. Maybe it's their role. Maybe it's something in their profile that we didn't like, but that's where he's at for me. So I could easily see myself even just moving him up to the top of that tier if he has a strong September and gets off to a good start, which would put him all the way up to, what, wide receiver 18 for me. So now you're talking mid-wide receiver too, pretty respectable. So where do you have Ridley?
Yeah, I have him in mid. I think it's in mid-20s. Mid-20s for me. He's about that same range and maybe just a little bit further down the line. And I think that the name of the game in fantasy is obviously – it's opportunity. And so I think my biggest concern is just the lack of a ceiling in competition for targets with the other guys who you have Julio and you have the respectable Sanu. And let's say you have a healthy Devontae Freeman and he's back in the mix and he actually gets back to pass catching form again. So I'm not sure if the touchdowns don't come back to, you know, double digits again, I'm concerned that, you know, he just kind of caps out where he is. And so I think a lot of people might, even though he might have another 800-yard season, if he has 800 yards and five touchdowns or so, then he falls into the Corey Davis category of production, and people are all of a sudden concerned. So that's where I am. He's just less safe for me. Obviously, I was still impressed by his game. I love to watch him run routes. I think he's a really talented football player, but just objectively speaking, you can't get as excited about him. But do you have anything more to say on Ridley, or do you want to move on to the other three guys we want to get excited about?
Well, the last thing I would say in terms of opportunity, I mean, Mohamed Sanu, you know, he is a nice player. They have the chemistry, he and Ryan, but he had 94 targets last year. And I think we're going to find out in the first month how good the team really thought Ridley was. I mean, he actually out-targeted Ridley by two targets last year. And they had almost identical stat lines other than the touchdowns. I mean, I think there's room if the team really believes that Ridley was a difference maker and those stats weren't just a product of being in a high-flying offense, if they really believe that, he's going to see more targets steered his way. I mean, we could see a situation where Matt Ryan's propping up, you know, multiple wide receiver ones. I mean, I think that's range of possible outcomes if the team treats Ridley that way. I mean, I think he certainly could be a guy that could find his way to 125, 130 targets to offset some of the touchdown regression if the team opts to use Sanu a little differently and pushes him down into the, you know, maybe Sanu only gets like four targets a game this year and the rest goes to Ridley. So we have to look at both sides of the coin there. You know, I feel pretty comfortable with where I've got him given, you know, that if his role doesn't expand, he's probably likely to score fewer touchdowns. But if his role did expand, you know, he's in a spot where I can move him up easily without much, you know, without really giving it much more thought. So that's where I'll leave it with Ridley.
Yeah. I think that's good points across the board. I think that there's lots of potential for things to just shift slightly in his favor target wise. I completely agree. But it's hard to predict right now, but analytically speaking, he doesn't fall in a very fair tree of, you know, expectations. I guess he's not in a good branch with a whole bunch of other people around him that we've seen succeed at a high level before, but we've outlined that probably enough. But how about you tell our listeners how they can get some free money?
Free money, $25 free on us with code VIZ25 in the Yahoo Daily Fantasy Sports lobby. You got to check out Yahoo Daily Fantasy Sports if you haven't been playing. I've been hammering PGA every week. It's been really fun. Yahoo has GPP contests that have max entry limits of 10 per player. They've got Quick Match for head-to-heads where you can get paired up with random other users based on their experience and their win-loss record. You can play a traditional head-to-head, but if you want to avoid, you know, going up against people that are just total degens and smash it every week, you can use that Quick Match feature. Highly recommend that. The lobby is also full of Major League Baseball right now. You know, of course, we don't have any NBA, NHL, or NFL, but there are big things coming there. You can try your hand at PGA at Yahoo DFS with $25 free on us. Use code VIZ25. Go to yahoo.com/dailyfantasy today and start your journey.
Yep. So I kind of hinted at this earlier. There were three other guys that we're super interested in beyond just DJ Moore and Calvin Ridley. There's Courtland Sutton, Christian Kirk, Dante Pettis. And I don't want to give it away what order we're really ranking those guys in just yet. But right now I was looking at where they're going and where you can get them in startups. And, you know, Courtland Sutton and Christian Kirk over the past 30 days on FFP startups, they're going almost identically around pick 82, ADP of around 81 point something, 80, 82. So dead even here recently. And then just behind them is Dante Pettis at 90.5. So, I mean, those guys might bunch up even more so just because, you know, we're human. We kind of bunch things together. We like to see patterns and we're like, oh, they're second year rookies. And those three are right next to each other right now. And that might even be more so value wise as August nears, as the season nears. But it's interesting to me that they are so close just from an opportunity standpoint and who they have to compete with. I mean, Christian Kirk got a bunch of company. He still has Larry Fitzgerald, or the ghost of him anyway, and Andy Isabella added in the second round, and Twitter's darling favorite, Hakeem Butler, who was added first pick of the fourth round. It's going to be a high-flying offense, but they've added some pieces around him, and still his average draft position hasn't really changed hardly at all since the draft. And then Dante Pettis, I mean, he got Deebo Samuel added on, and even though people don't want to give him credit at all, Jalen Hurd, and they still have George Kittle there. And then even like the bevy of running backs that they have that can catch passes as well. And then you got Courtland Sutton on the other side, who doesn't have much of any competition, really. And he's got, even if Sanders does come back at some point and is alive after his horrible injury, I mean, he doesn't really have much to compete with. I mean, he has, what, Deshaun Hamilton, Tim Patrick. There wasn't as many dramatic moves that it made it look like, you know, he wasn't the guy. Are you higher on Sutton than the other two? Or where do you have those three ranked right now, Curtis?
Okay, so the order for me would go Christian Kirk, Courtland Sutton, Dante Pettis. And it's not that I feel strongly necessarily about the three players individually. With Christian Kirk, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. And I think that the air raid that Cliff Kingsbury is putting in, I think with Kyler Murray coming on board and already understanding the system, I just think that that team is going to pass the ball so much, just so much. And Kirk looks to be in line for potentially maybe the most desirable role in the offense as a move receiver who is going to be going across the middle on mesh concepts, him and Andy Isabella causing havoc in the middle of the field. And Kirk is amazing with yards after catch. And I just think the way that offense is going to be designed is really going to be perfectly suited to his skills. And he's going to have plenty of opportunity because I think they're going to, you know, they're going to be one of these teams that passes the ball 600 times. So I just think that volume can cover up any warts in the profile there. Courtland Sutton, you know, the Broncos passed the eighth most times in the NFL last year. I don't think they're going to do that with Joe Flacco. It's going to be a different design. I think they're going to involve Royce Freeman a little bit more, along with Philip Lindsay and try to control the game and cater back to that defense being, you know, strategic to their success. But, you know, Sutton has, or at least last year, had a unique role in the offense. I mean, easily was the best downfield weapon. And, you know, Joe Flacco is a different downfield passer than Case Keenum. We've seen him be very successful at times in his career, not as much of late. You know, but Joe Flacco hasn't had a guy with the skill sets or the physical makeup of Courtland Sutton, maybe ever in his career. You know, he's had some pretty decent receivers at times. He's had Michael Crabtree. He's had late career Steve Smith. He has not had a guy like Courtland Sutton. And seems to be very pleased with that weapon just from the OTA talks and interviews. He brought up Sutton's name plenty of times. You know, we see Manny Sanders running around, and it's great that he's recovering from that injury. But at his age, age 31 and plus some months, coming back from a devastating injury like that, you know, I just don't know if he's going to have the same elusiveness. So I think Sutton's going to lead the team in targets. He had 84 last year. You know, I think he's a pretty solid bet to have 100 plus targets. And if he just does what he did last year on that, you know, he's going to be a threat for 900 or 1,000 yards. And I do think that his touchdown total of 4 is basically a lock to rise. I'd be very shocked if he scored less than like 7 touchdowns. So, you know, I'm finding myself higher on Sutton than I thought I would be. And I kind of struggle with that because I didn't love him as a prospect. Really didn't.
Yeah, I mean, so, there were some things that were missing.
I'm coming to terms with it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just coming to terms with it. But at the end of the day, he was a very high draft pick, and he's in a spot to be the alpha that they drafted him to be. And so there could be a little confirmation bias there too. I mean, they just went out and got Flacco, and let's go show off our shiny new weapon. With Dante Pettis, I'm a little bit more worried about Deebo Samuel, just like you are. And I also just think that George Kittle is their weapon. I mean, he is going to be their weapon.
He's the wide receiver one. he's the guy.
So it's not that it's not that I don't think that Pettis could be fantasy relevant, or, I mean, to me, he just kind of reeks more of like a fantasy flex, and I'm struggling to see him with Deebo and Kittle and how they're going to use those backs in the passing game. That three backs they're trying to work in. They still have Marquise Goodwin. It's tough. It's tough for me to feel solid about it. I have the most questions about what his role is going to be, and that's why I've got him lower.
Yeah, and I think that's completely fair. I mean, he had that window of, I believe it was 6 games, where he had exactly in between 5 and 7 targets 6 weeks in a row. And that would be great. If you extrapolate that over throughout an entire season, that ends up being, you know, maybe over 100, you know, maybe around 100, you know, say you're averaging 6 targets a game, just over that, it's over 100 targets. That's okay. But that's not, you know, elite target volume. And then they went out and added a couple weapons, and really Kittle's the guy anyway. I'm not super high on Deebo Samuel as is, but I'm not super high on that offense, you know, growing extensively in terms of target share opportunity for any one individual, with the exception of maybe just even, you know, with Jimmy G healthy, and maybe they're just a little bit better on offense as a whole. Maybe a little boost to Kittle just in general, because he's always going to be on the field. The wide receivers, I think that's just going to be a mismatch. I'm not really sure who to go all in on there. And I think you're right, though, with Kirk. I mean, the Steelers threw the ball 689 times last year. So it wouldn't be insane to think, given who's at the helm of the offense, that the Cardinals could seriously be near 700 pass attempts this year. So if that's the case, I mean, you could have 3 wide receivers on that team that actually find some fantasy relevance pretty consistently, which would be incredible. But that's also kind of hoping that David Johnson doesn't take all the catches as well. So I don't know how that gets all distributed. And so because I'm just a little bit, for me, just because I'm a little bit apprehensive there, I think that makes Christian Kirk a fantastic value to target, because people are worried about the target split there. But I think I have Sutton just a little bit higher, just because I do believe that offense isn't going to completely change. I believe that they could take a step back. In fact, I bet you would have won a bunch of bar bets if you said that the Broncos actually threw the ball the 8th most times last year. I think that no one would have even believed you. So I think they do maybe go back around the league average, just around, you know, 5'10", whatever it was last year in terms of pass attempts, nothing crazy, maybe 5'20" or something like that. But I think that there's still enough of the pie to go around that Sutton sees a value increase this year because he gets that 7-touchdown mark, because he sees an increase in yards. And so for me, he's like the safest of the three just because of the opportunity. And really last year, I mean, we were just talking about DJ Moore for hitting 160 fantasy points. I mean, Courtland Sutton had 136, I think, 137, somewhere like just shy of 140 on the year. And he wasn't even really used right away. So I don't know. I like his chances given what we know between the three right now. But beyond those three, is there anybody else that you're finding yourself kind of gravitating towards? I know your article, I think you had one that obviously you liked. I don't know if you want to share about him or not, but anybody besides the five we mentioned tonight that you're looking to go out and buy?
I'm going to say one more thing about Dante Pettis that gives me a little pause. He didn't play with Jimmy Garoppolo at all last year, really. I mean, he did. He got on the field in the first couple of weeks, but that streak of games you mentioned, that was all post-Garoppolo injury. So we've never really seen, you know, what's that chemistry look like? They haven't done anything meaningful in the regular season together yet. So
totally true.
Yeah, so I think we've got to let that settle. But, you know, of some of these other year two names, when I was doing my, you know, my research on this 3-10 rule, if I move the screener down to 6 games with 3 receptions for that same age 21 wide receiver group since the year 2000, only one more name jumps into that list, and it's Kiki Kuti. And you know, that's tough for me because, you know, Will Fuller has popped so much when he's been healthy, but that's been few instances and far between. I mean, if you look at what Will Fuller's done in his career versus what your perception of is when you're able to put him in your lineup, it's like, you know, it's total dichotomy because he's so impactful when he's on the field, but he's just never available. I mean, I think his best finish is, I think I've got it right here. Hold on. Something like wide receiver 60 or something. If you look at season long, Will Fuller, 62, 60, and 90 in his 3 years. I mean, and that's total season raw scoring. It's not points per game, but you know, that's illustrative of him being available. So, Kiki, you know, there's a lot of guys that I really respect that are high on him. I know Scott Barrett's high on him, has written some offseason pieces on him. And I mean, being tied to Deshaun Watson in a Texans offense that's always underrated for what it does in the passing game. There's so much focus on DeAndre Hopkins and what he does. But some of those other peripheral assets have been quite valuable. And if a solid number two were to emerge that could stay on the field, I'd be very interested. I mean, I love the idea of going after Deshaun Watson's weapons. I think he's still ascending. I think Deshaun Watson's on the list of guys that, you know, has top three quarterback upside this year. And that's not a very, you know, I really don't think it's a very long list. I think he does enough with his legs and still can throw 4,500 yards. So Kiki's not a guy that was really on my radar last year too much. I kind of just looked past him. Really haven't been going out after him much in Dynasty. I think there's been enough hype to keep him, you know, as a top 100 player even right now. In the RotoViz rankings, probably a little ahead of where he's at in ADP, but just he's still more than I really want to go buy. But I'm certainly watching. I'm certainly watching. And if Will Fuller were to be injured or something at that point, I'd be willing to go out, I think, an overpay for Kiki. I think some of the other guys in year two that we've got to at least think about, and I'll see maybe who you like out of this group. You know, we've got Anthony Miller. He was another one of these old, you know, 24-year-olds at the end of the year. James Washington. Deshaun Hamilton, who we spoke a little bit about, DJ Chark, Michael Gallup, Traquan Smith, any of these guys interesting for you?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few I like. I mean, DJ Chark was absolutely free, as he's always has been. And, you know, some wide receiver is going to have to catch the ball from Nick Foles. Maybe it's still a mess this year, but I like throwing a dart his way. I was a fan of him and his price tag, even as a rookie, given his draft capital. But really, James Washington is super intriguing. I'd rather just own all three of the non Juju Smith-Schuster Pittsburgh wide receivers if I could. If I could just put a waiver claim in for all three of them, I would. Just because, I mean, Deontay Johnson coming in, getting some definitely surprising to most people anyway, draft capital there, sneaking into, you know, round three, I believe, there this year. I mean, he's just a couple of seasons removed from, you know, having a 2,000-plus all-purpose yard season for Toledo. So that's impressive. Not super athletic. And then he's competing with a more veteran guy, Dante Moncrief, who's really never put it all together, had a few opportunities to. With Andrew Luck, just never found his way in. And there's, you know, there's the camp hype already early on, just because, and yeah, I think it just makes sense because he's the veteran. Like, of course, the guy who's in his like fifth season should have it together in June, more so than a second year guy in James Washington, who only caught 16 balls last year, and a rookie. I mean, yeah, obviously he should have more going for him right now. But I think once we get to August, the guy that fills a role that they don't necessarily have figured out right now is James Washington. I mean, he's the burner, at least he was in college, who over 200 receptions averaged more than 20 yards per reception in college. Obviously, some of that is schematic, but that's skill set as well. So I think that's a role that he fills more so than a Deontay Johnson, more so than a Dante Moncrief ever has. So if he fills in that vertical role, I think that he could be a guy who has a few splashy games and his price skyrockets from where it is currently. So that's a guy I am fishing around for. I think he's even cheaper in trades still because of the Moncrief worry, because of Deontay Johnson, than his startup price would be. So that's somebody I'm intrigued to look into the price for sure. And, you know, of course, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, MVS for short, is intriguing, but he falls in that. I think if you might tell me if I'm wrong, but I think he fell into that 24-year-old rookie area with Calvin Ridley too, right?
He may have been on the list. Yeah. he may be in that cohort, that undesirable cohort. But hey, I want to throw a couple of names your way, because this whole Steelers thing, it's kind of grinding my gears a little bit. So like 6 weeks ago, we hear reports that James Washington has showed up to camp and he's trimmed down and he's like 207 pounds or something, or 210 pounds. He's dropped 10 or 15 pounds. And everyone's like, oh man, you got to get James Washington. Like, they have to fill all these Antonio Brown targets, and Juju's going to get 160 and Jay Wash is getting 100. Like, just watch it. And then, so we like fast forward a month, and now James Washington is garbage because of one beat report saying that Dante Moncrief has looked really good in the OTAs. Now, I'm not going to claim to have this figured out, but I want to remind the people of what the Steelers have done when they bring in these free agent wide receivers. I think he fits a bit of a mold for them. So their last two stabs that they threw at kind of these upside guys that have never achieved it before getting to Pittsburgh: Darius Hayward Bay, Justin Hunter. You know, are they going in the Hall of Fame with the Steel City logo on their helmet?
No.
So, I mean, let's just be careful here. I mean, what are the Steelers renowned for? The Steelers are renowned for drafting wide receivers year after year after year, teaching them their system, and then they break out. I mean, it's what's happened forever, for 10, 15 years. I mean, you know, go all the way back to Mike Wallace. And it's not even, you know, the early round guys. You know, many times they've hit in round 3 years later. Emmanuel Sanders, Antonio Brown. I mean, going back even with some of the higher draft picks, Santonio Holmes. I mean, these guys know how to draft and develop wide receivers. And most of the time, they don't hit as rookies. Very few times, they're patient with their rookie wide receivers. Now, objectively, James Washington was awful last year. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. He was one of PFF's worst graded wide receivers last year. So, I mean, there's nowhere to go but up. But I think just handing this crown of 100 targets to Dante Moncrief or to Deontay Johnson as a rookie, I think is extremely misguided. And if we look at what the Steelers have done in their history, everything would point to James Washington getting the chance to fail there before anyone else would see those targets. I mean, I'll buy a Vance McDonald narrative before I'll buy Dante Moncrief is just waltzing into 100 targets this year. So it's going to be interesting to see how things go in camp. Ignore these stupid beat reports right now. We need to see where are the snap counts and combined practices with other teams. Who's with the first team snap counts? Who's with the first team snap counts in preseason? Who's playing more with the second team? You know, those are the things that we need to be paying attention to. Nothing we've seen now is actionable other than, you know, it's actionable if somebody decides that it is. It's, none of it has meant anything yet. Other than James Washington's now cheaper than he was 6 weeks ago because Moncrief's the flavor of the week.
Thank goodness. So, thank goodness for hype. Thank goodness for the summer. You know, just it gives us some great opportunities to go steal guys that shouldn't be as cheap as they are. But, you know, it's always...
Dante Moncrief, can you remind me? I'm sorry, I'm not done on this stupid Moncrief thing. You know, wasn't he going to go in and save the Jacksonville Jaguars last year? Wasn't he different than like everyone that was on their team? How long did he stay there?
I think one season. I think that's what it was. So, yeah.
I mean, he's played. We can't even give him the quarterback excuse. He's played with good quarterbacks before. He's had Andrew Luck. It's not like, you know, Roethlisberger is the first decent player, you know, he's had under center. I'm just, you know, be careful.
Yeah, exactly. And right, I'm done. I actually said, you know, we should have like a bonus segment, an hour extra, just Moncrief rant. But we'll maybe see that if that's interesting to some of the guys in the premium Slack and see if we can just get that going. I think that would be a prime listenership for sure.
Just me and you and like three guys.
Like three guys channel, rant. Yeah.
Just slandering Moncrief.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. But anyway, if we wanted to talk about these second year breakouts for running backs and wide receivers because it's tough. It's always tough finding the right players to target for breakouts. And so I hope that, you know, tonight was helpful, maybe for your confirmation bias, maybe to just objectively take a look at some players that you might want to go out and buy or trust. But always remember, you can always reach us on Twitter. I'm at @FF_TravisM. Curtis is at @CPatrickNFL. You can always jump into our premium Slack. It's just a great community of people that love talking football, dynasty trades, and a whole bunch of nonsense this time of year. But thanks again for joining us for another Dynasty Command Center podcast. And until next time, keep living that dynasty life. Yeah, that was good. I'm sure that my...
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.